Okay, so this is not live. We are recording. If you need to re-say something or if you need a cough or whatever.
I gave him the rundown.
Oh, well, thank you, Zach.
You're welcome, Wim.
Zach prepped you in the green room?
Yes. Okay. The service was great. Yeah,
was it?
Yeah.
How was the buffet?
The catering is wonderful. Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Craft service.
It's lovely. Great.
Craft services really did an outstanding job this week. Just so good. All right. Everybody ready?
Yep.
All right. Mash, mash, mashing, but ugly, but it's clashing like a rash with all the passion at the bottomless pit. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Taproom Talks. I'm Wim Benz, founder of Lakewood Brewing Company. In the studio with me, as always, are Craig and Zach, our creative team.
Hi.
Hello.
Craig says hi.
Craig doesn't have a mic right now because we have a packed room in here. Because today we are going to talk about homebrewing. A lot of us started as homebrewers, so we're going to talk about homebrewing. And our esteemed guests are Damon Lewis, the head brewer of Cedar Creek Brewing. We have Kelly Harris, the homebrew guru from Homebrew Headquarters. We have our own Desiree Holt, who also happens to be the vice president of the Rockwall Homebrewers Club. Let's get after it, guys. Hi.
Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you guys for coming into the studio and talking about homebrewing, where it all begins, right?
Pretty much.
So let's just kind of go down the line and, you know, how did everybody get into homebrewing? Kelly, I'm going to start with you since you're the elder statesman here. How did you get into homebrewing?
Well, I was living in Oklahoma City at the time, and I had a great love for beer. And shopping, looking for something different to drink, I saw this can of hop malt extract sitting on the shelf. And I thought it was a beer till I picked it up, and I realized, hey, you can make beer at home.
There you go.
Then shortly thereafter, I found Bricktown Brewery, if any of y'all are familiar with them in Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
And I visited with the head brewer there, and he showed me the four ingredients to make beer and all the different beers you can make out of it. And I was hooked after that.
That's awesome. Damon?
Well, mine, I guess he's currently my wife, but my father-in-law, he was kind of into homebrewing. He wasn't very good at it, but I was getting into craft beer. We had a brew pub in the town I grew up in and kind of going in there. And we moved to Texas in 2002, and that's when I started homebrewing. And about 2003, I think I got involved in the North Texas Homebrewers, and that's, you know, kind of went from there. But it was just, I don't know, found it interesting for some reason, and obviously it took off from there. So
there you go. Des, how long have you been homebrewing?
I have been homebrewing for almost 10 years. I got into it in Montana, just kind of looking at the beers on the market. There wasn't a lot to offer at any local establishment and was a little bit frustrated with that. So kind of started to decide to go out on my own, figure out what I could make that I actually enjoyed. And so I also kind of enjoy the science of it. So I could kind of bring in some my previous science degrees and
there you go.
Have some fun stuff going on at home.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. So, for me, you know, similar story. You know, finally kind of found craft beer on my 21st birthday when I went to the Flying Saucer and started drinking all those beers there. And then a couple of years later, a buddy of mine had a kit. I think it was a Mr. Beer kit, and it did not make very good beer, but it was interesting. And it was one of those aha moments. Oh, you can make beer? That's neat. He got into it a little more, and as I think as most homebrewers in North Texas, you find yourself over at Kelly's store at Homebrew Headquarters, and you go, okay, now what? And then and then they go, well,
I begin.
Well, okay. And then it's, you know, 3 hours later, you get out of the store, and you've bought this kit, and you're like, okay, well, I hope I don't screw this up. You know, at some point, I think there's a little bit of a delineation, right? You know, some people will start with their Mr. Beer kit or start with their basic kit they get at Homebrew Headquarters or another homebrew store, and you either stick with it or you don't, right? You either keep doing that and keep improving, or you say, oh, well, that was fun. I'm just going to let the pros take care of it, and I'm just going to enjoy beer, but I'm not necessarily going to make my own or keep this up as a hobby. So can you guys think of when you kind of crossed that threshold? Damon, for me and you, obviously, this turned into a profession.
Right,
so,
right.
You know, that's sort of taking it to the next level. But was there a point, Kelly, after you'd gotten that can of hopped malt syrup where you said, well, okay, well, this made an okay beer, but I'm going to do better?
Well, I kind of lucked into it. I had to move back to Dallas, so I left Oklahoma City right when I was novice of the novices in homebrewing.
Mm-hmm.
I had a friend who had a mutual friend who owned homebrew headquarters at the time. Of course, I needed work, and he asked me to come aboard and work at homebrew headquarters. Well, mm-hmm. I have a degree in education. Thought I was going to coach football and teach the rest of my life, and I love beer, and I know how to teach.
Right.
And I fell in love with teaching people how to make beer. You can start with a Mr. Beer. You can start with anything.
Mm-hmm.
The key is to learn and have fun. There's no reason why any of you, because I've seen two of you start at the beginning mm-hmm. and have taken it way beyond the expectations of most people.
Sure.
But that doesn't mean that anybody in their kitchen can make as good a beer as anything they're buying on the shelf. It's just learning and practicing and understanding.
Absolutely. Damon, was there a time for you?
Yeah, I mean, and I started with the Mr. Beer Kit. I did one batch, and it was terrible. And I was like, just like you said, I can make better beer than this because there is better beer out there. So,
right.
So I kind of just went just deep end in, you know, and there wasn't as many resources back then. You know, you had like news groups and things like that, but there mm-hmm. wasn't as many books, and some of them were pretty outdated. But really got into it is when I got involved in kind of a homebrew club. You know, you get around people that are energetic about beer, and it makes you kind of want to do more.
Yeah.
Now, there was no internet back when I learned to brew, so you had to buy a book.
Yeah.
And most people are visual. They have to see it. I highly recommend that. Yeah, sure. Watch the YouTubes and all of that.
Sure.
But you still have questions when you're watching those.
Right.
And nothing's better than coming in and talking to somebody that has experience and knows how to make beer and walk you through the steps and hold the equipment and understand what they're doing when you watch those YouTubes.
Mm-hmm.
They can't tell you everything. They can tell you how to get started.
Yeah.
And that's when we come into play.
Right.
And I'll agree with that, throwing out the Rockwell Homebrewers Association.
Sure.
But
sure.
Being involved in any homebrewers association where you can travel to someone different every month, if you can get your hands on a different type of system, if you're new to brewing, you can see what different people are using, if people are doing fly sparges or specific way on their own system, to where if you're not ready to invest yet, you would like to just get your hands on it or see, you know, who's doing grain only, who's mm-hmm. doing extracts, what should I do, where should I take this to start your own home brewing side, just to get in with a homebrewers association anywhere locally that is available to you, I think is a huge asset.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Damon and I were members of the North Texas Homebrewers Association. There have been a lot more that have popped up in the last, I would say, 5 or 10 years. Mm-hmm. But yeah, homebrewing as a, with a club, you know, homebrewing is just more fun to do with people. You know, even if it's just a, you know, you and a buddy in your driveway, or if it's a bunch of people and you're really just kind of, like Des was saying, going to see other people's rigs and other people's equipment. I mean, it's a hobby, right? It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well,
it's a big social gathering.
No one knows everything, but
right.
as a club, you know everything. There may be a guy that knows everything you need to know about Belgian beers.
Sure.
There may be a guy specializing in lagers.
Mm-hmm.
You may just be learning. So usually there's someone there doing a beginner ingredient kit. There may be someone, as Desiree spoke upon, that's doing mm-hmm. intermediate brewing, extract brewing with specialty grains.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or it could be like Damon, who jumped whole hog in after doing his first Mr. Beer. He went all grain. But you don't have to do that. And most people have to go through the progression of a canned malt extract, learning the cleaning and sanitizing, the basic procedures.
Right.
You do one or two of those, and you're ready to move on to extract brewing.
Yeah.
Now I'm understanding how to use the malt and the hops and the yeast at different temperatures.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm ready to do my all grain.
Right.
And learn how to make it from scratch and not using the extracts, which has a much higher potential of making a better quality beer, but it's a lot more work and more equipment.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
But it's funner.
Yeah.
And I like to be able to see everybody bring a bottle of something that they've been brewing recently, and they're saying, hey, check this out. Someone in the group is normally a Cicerone or, you know, palate trained or judge, and it's like, there's just something going on here, and I just really don't know what's going on. I mean, the flavor profile is there or something's up, and it's like, hey, maybe it was a hop that I used, that, you know, I mm-hmm. used a certain one I haven't tried before, and someone there can give you some kickback, and it's like, oh, man, that was so simple. I've never thought of that.
Right.
See that every day. Every day in the store, people will bring their beers in, and they don't like some aspect of it, and they give it to us, And I'm making an English bitter, and we drink it, and I go, this is right on. This is perfect.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You just don't like English bitters.
Right. There you go.
We need to figure out a beer style you like. That's like going to those beer emporiums like Flying Saucer or Ginger Man. And I used to take a little notebook with me, and I would write down all the different beers I had. Mm-hmm. Hey, I don't like stouts, I learned. Hey, I don't like porters. Hey, I love IPAs. Mm-hmm. And then when you get into homebrewing, you figure out how those beers are made, and then you can tweak them and make your own. That's what's fun about homebrewing, is you can make a beer that you can't buy.
Yep. Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, is when people get serious about homebrewing, or people where your example is they bring the beer and they want to know what's wrong and to make it better, and they actually want to take your feedback. Mm-hmm. Some people, you know, just like, here's my beer. I don't really, you know, want to hear about it. And that's fine if that's what you want to do. But I think that's when you start to get to the next level. It's like, well, how can I make this better? And let me go ask people and get advice and enter competitions and all that.
Well, a lot of times there are problems with their beer, but usually they're, you know, technical flaws. Then that's why we're there at Homebrew Headquarters to tell you, hey, you got this issue, you got that issue, and it's easy to correct. Don't give up on your first Mr. Beer Kit like you did in Damon.
Right.
Now we have these great beers from Cedar Creek.
I love the days where I look back and my first batch was amazing, and then my second batch and third batch, they were not what I had anticipated as the first batch had been. Being super frustrated with doing something great, and then realizing, you know, it was just a temperature malfunction in my brewing or something I hadn't paid close enough attention to in my second and third batch, to be able to come to a Homebrewers Association meeting and just like, okay, here's my first, second, and third bottle. Like, someone help me out here. Where did I go wrong in these other two? Because I cannot replicate what I think was great on my first bottle.
That's very common, Desiree. A lot of beginners follow the directions to a T and are quite anal about it, and they should be. Mm-hmm. Then they get a little cocky on their second or third batch, and they try to streamline the process, and it may sacrifice some of the quality.
Or I changed the yeast strain. I thought I had the same yeast or something, just something so minute where I thought I had it dialed in.
Yeah.
It was just a simple mistake.
Yeah, or fermentation temperature.
Sure.
Or, I mean, there's, you know, as we all know, there's a myriad of variables that can be adjusted. All right, guys, we'll be right back. We're going to talk about new releases. Last and once again, and young and old and big and brash and in control, about a roll but just a dash. Whisper then. Okay, guys, I got a really awesome beer to talk about for our new releases. This will be coming out next month. It's a beer that we've been working on for quite a while, and it is it's the next one in our legendary series. What we're doing is we're doing something a little bit different. The next three beers in our legendary series are all part of the same little mini series that we're doing. It's all around the fates.
Yeah.
So the first one is going to be called Thread Spinner. The second one is going to be called
The Grand Allowance.
And the third one is called Zach.
Grim Shearer.
They're really interesting beers. It's going to be a barley wine, a wheat wine, and a rye wine. So this is something that I don't think any other brewery's ever done before. We're going to release these beers about 6 months apart. And the idea is that you buy two bottles every time there's a release, and by the time the last one is released, the first and the second one will be perfectly aged to enjoy them all together in a vertical. So this is really cool. We're very excited about it. It's going to be about a year and a half project. But like I said, the first one in this series, one of three, Thread Spinner, is going to be coming out next month. It'll be available on draft, and it'll be available in 22-ounce collectible bombers. The bombers are going to be really cool, too, have very interesting art on them, and they'll be able to be displayed all together when all three of them are out. So it's going to be really, really neat. So the first one, Thread Spinner, is a barley wine that we have aged in bourbon barrels. It's a big, big beer. It's going to be awesome. Right when it comes out, it'll have spent a significant amount of time in barrels already. They're Witherspoon barrels that we put them in, it's just only going to get better. You know, in about the year that it's going to take for that third one to come out. So it'll be really interesting. It'll be an awesome thing for you guys to try along with us. And we're very excited about it. So stay tuned on more information of the new Legendary Series Trio
that'll be coming out soon. The future doesn't know its past. Bloodbath bashing beneath the teeth were gnashing. Well, I think this is kind of a question for all of us in different ways. You know, when was the moment that brewing finally became a career? You know, Kelly, for you, operating a brewing store. For Dez, you know, getting into the beer industry on the sales side and, you know, still doing the Homebrew Rockwall Association. Mm-hmm. And then for, you know, obviously for me and Damon, building a brewery.
Right.
So, you know, was there a moment? For me, it was always a journey. It wasn't like I woke up one day and said, oh, well, that sounds like a good idea. I'm going to just do that. I started homebrewing. We were doing stuff in the kitchen. I really loved the process, you know, started making more and more beer, and then started entering competitions. And I think that's kind of where things started to kind of deviate from the path my life was taking. You know, starting to win competitions was really validation that, well, shit, we might be onto something.
It's right. Going to look like we planned this, because mine's a very similar story. Is I started getting serious into competitions. I brewed mm-hmm. with a good friend of mine, Orlando. He doesn't really do a lot of brewing anymore, but we went and started getting serious, and we entered National Homebrewers Conference in, I think, 2009, mm-hmm. I believe. We won two first place, which is pretty good.
Yeah, and very awesome. Good.
Gordon awesome. Strong beat us, you know, we barely missed Nikasi by that, but mm-hmm. that year they happened to do a golden ticket to the Sierra Nevada Beer Camp, and so they had all the homebrewers come out and make a beer there, and that really kind of just fired off. I'd like to do this someday, I think. It's, like I said, it's that perfect yeah. blend of science and art and everything else and emotion, and so... I mean, that's kind of the moment that set me on the path, you know. It was actually, I think, a year later that we ended up start planning the brewery. But it just worked out that somebody came in and I could fall into that position. It wasn't like I had the money and was the go. It was a plan at some point.
Yeah, so. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and for me, I found myself at a crossroads where I could either continue with my sciences that I had, you know, went to school for, things of that sort. And I had all this homebrew experience and a lot of recipes behind me. And I found myself not wanting to go back to a daily life of monotony and working in a lab or working in that field anymore. And I really just wanted to be able to express myself creatively. Mm-hmm. And beer fulfills that for me. It's different every day. You can create something different every day. Your day is what you want it to be. And so I found myself wanting to be in an industry where I could find myself passionate and express myself that way.
And Kelly, you just needed a job, right?
Well, like I said, I was the luckiest man in the world. I was able to take what I studied for in school and be able to apply it to my hobby.
Yeah.
And after a couple years of working for the previous owner at Homebrew Headquarters, he decided he wanted to become a pilot, and he made an offer to me to purchase the store, and that couldn't have been a greater gift to me, because
yeah.
I've been doing it now, I don't know how long, I'd have to count.
Well, how long has it been? Let's
20
count.
Years, hell, I don't know. Yeah.
A long
and
time.
I love it every day.
Yeah.
And I remember you guys getting started. I remember I'm as enthusiastic teaching the first guy as I am teaching the most experienced guy, and watching them go to these competitions, watching them win these awards. I think I get more joy out of that than any award I ever won, because, as I said to you one
yeah.
time, Wim, I like to think I had a little something to do with
absolutely,
Wim
for
Ben.
Sure. Absolutely. Sure.
Yeah, I was going to say, you've probably been in a position where you've seen every one of these breweries that started up come through your doors is just
damn near. They're all
I mean,
they're all friends.
Yeah.
A lot of my a lot of my employees are now head brewers somewhere,
yeah.
assistant brewers somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of my customers are now owning their own breweries and making kick butt beer.
Yeah.
And promoting the hobby. They're my best advertising, because they know how fun it is. They know that you can be successful at this, maybe not professionally or maybe professionally, but you know you can make good beer.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, I think, you know, for me, I always tell people, you know, if they're really passionate about craft beer, and we have a lot of very, very passionate people in, you know, in North Texas and just in the U.S. in general, to try it out. You know, there's a lot of armchair quarterbacks out there that you know that'll talk trash about craft beer, but you know, I think you know, it gives you a better appreciation of what we do on a daily basis, you know, kind of the love and the heart and the soul that goes into it. So, and it makes you a better beer drinker,
yeah.
Right? I mean, at the end of the day, if you know how something's made, and if you've actually done it, you know, even on a small level, you have a much better appreciation of that product, and you are going to be much more passionate and enthusiastic when you find something that's like, oh wow, that's a really interesting beer, you know, I wonder how they made that. And you really are going to wonder, because you're going to know a little bit of the technical side of things, which just, you know, just makes for a much more in-depth experience with something that you're already super excited about, which is craft beer.
Oh, which is the perfect segue into the next question.
It's like you planned it.
It's like I planned it. I didn't even write this.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Zach. Which is the perfect segue into our next question, which is, how does homebrewing give you a better appreciation for beer in general? And I think it's what we were just saying.
Yeah.
But what about you guys? How do you think that homebrewing in general makes a better beer drinker?
I think it, like, and it's really what you said, is that it gives you the technical understanding, even if it's on a very basic level, mm-hmm. to really know what's going on and how much work and effort and people are putting into making the beers. You know, that it's not like beer just makes itself, and it doesn't require just a ton of effort and knowledge and skill, and there's got to be a lot of passion. Otherwise, I think that it doesn't show through in the beer.
Sure.
You know, if someone's just making it but doesn't care about it, I think it definitely shows in the end process. And so, being a formed consumer, you can really make better choices too. You know, if you know how it's made, you're really going to make a better choice on beer and understand, okay, maybe this is why I don't like this beer, not because it's bad. Maybe it's just not my style, that sort of thing, too.
Right.
So.
Right.
For me, it's kind of created a passion within myself where it's now a vicious circle. I brew beers that I really want because it's cool and funky, and then I go out and I try to find a cool and funky beer, and then I find something random that's new, so then I go home and I try to create something funkier and cooler, and then I find myself now in this frenzy.
Yeah. I can make that better.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly right. That's the fun thing about the home brewing, and that's what y'all have done as professional brewers. You're mm-hmm. you're not making Guinness stout, you're making Temptress milk stout.
Sure.
No one else in the world has a beer like that.
Right.
A lot of people are attempting to make your beer in the home, and there's no reason why they can't, but they're going to take 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 attempts.
Sure.
And tweak their recipe till they come up. And then is what's funny is a lot of times we'll see people bring in recipes and side-by-side comparison to commercial beers, mm-hmm. and you taste them blindly, and they're identical. Then you look at the recipes, they're not the same.
That's interesting. Yeah.
And we see that a lot.
Yeah.
Sure. But exactly what you said, Wim, if you have an understanding or a basic knowledge of what hops do, bitterness, flavor, and aroma, you understand what malts do, the crystal malts, the high kill malts, the base malts, blah, blah, blah. And you understand the hundreds of different yeasts that produce different flavor profiles.
Mm-hmm.
Then when you pick up these fun, complex beers that are giving you the flavors that you're just, you have a basic understanding of how that brewer got there.
Right.
And you can go in the kitchen, and it may take you 2 or 3 attempts, but mm-hmm. pretty soon you're going to nail that beer to what you want. And
yeah.
then you're going to, like does Ray say, you want to make it your own.
Mm-hmm.
You throw a cinnamon stick in there, or wintergreen mm-hmm. leaves, or Belgium candy shirt, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And you play around with these fabulous beers and make them your own.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, and that's how I started as a home brewer, too. I tasted a beer and I went, oh, well, I want to make that. You know, for me, it was Belgian beers.
Right.
I wanted to make Chimay. Okay, well, let's make Chimay. Let's make, you know, let's make a Belgian Abbey beer and throw some Belgian candy sugar in it and see where that goes. And sometimes you hit it and sometimes you don't. And when you don't, you know, it's like those Bob Ross happy accidents. I was going for that, but this is much more interesting. So let's back it up and see what I did or didn't do or did differently. You know, oops, I pitched the wrong yeast. Well, but that gave me a really interesting outcome. And that's, you know, that's how recipes are born.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's how, perfect example. We had a broken refractometer.
Mm.
We are just boiling for hours and hours, and we're just not hitting our gravity. And we boiled off about half the batch, and we were trying to make
syrup.
Yeah, well, just about. But you know, we were trying to make a milk stout, but we were only trying to make like a 5 or 6% milk stout. And we, you know, it was hot. We had a bunch of boil off. It turned, you know, our gravity went shot way up. And we said, well, let's just see what happens. And that, I mean, that's how Temptress was born. Yeah. Okay, well, that turned out better than we initially expected. Let's do that again and figure out how to do that without, you know, quote unquote, making the mistake and doing it for real. You know, if it sucks, throw it out. You're not, you're out some time and you're out, you know, maybe 40, 50 bucks in raw materials. But yeah, you just keep experimenting and keep making those batches. You know, when a cook goes into the kitchen and they're trying to come up with a new recipe, those cooks aren't going in there. They're making it once and going, okay, it's perfect. No, they're going to make it 50 different ways, feed it to the staff and say, okay, guys, which one's working, which one's not, you know? Mm-hmm. So.
And I'd like to touch on something you mentioned there. I'd like to challenge people to not be afraid of the failure of a bad batch.
Absolutely.
Because
you always drink your mistakes,
if
right?
If I have a bad batch, I can look back on that and try to salvage it or figure out what happened there. But if every batch I've ever brewed went great, I'd never have challenged myself to create something better.
Yeah, I
would have been complacent, and maybe I wouldn't be here today.
Yeah. Some of the best beers in the world were accidents or mistakes. Mm-hmm. The key is to be able to repeat those accidents and mistakes. And as a home brewer, I urge you to always take notes. I added the hops at the wrong time. I pitched the wrong yeast. Mm-hmm. So if you stumble into an awesome recipe, you can repeat it.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, we continue to do that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
As professional brewers.
It doesn't change because you're doing it on a bigger scale.
Nope.
No.
Yeah. It does not.
It's just more expensive.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
There's more chance for failure for sure, yeah.
Exactly, exactly. We're going to take a little break, and we got Craig coming up with events. And here's Craig with events.
On September 24th, we are going to be down in Austin at the Texas Craft Brewers Festival once again. Every year, more and more breweries start joining in, so it's a lot of fun. If you are down in Austin during that, come on out and stop by and see us.
I think it's one of the better beer festivals that I've ever been to.
It's pretty cool.
I think it rivals GABF. I think it's just...
It's one of the only places you can go and see only Texas craft brewers, and it's...
Yep.
And it's pretty awesome.
And everyone brings out their best for that fest.
Absolutely.
So it's great.
And then Sunday, October 16th, we are once again doing our special glass series at the tap room. So come on out, and we will be featuring our brand new Punkle mug. It is a really cool little dimpled mug.
Ooh.
And you can put your Punkle Dunkle in there.
Ooh.
So... And Monday nights, we do sports balls. So
sports
come on
ball.
Out.
Sports ball.
Watch the game with us. So come on out. That's it for events. Thanks, Craig.
Yeah.
Hope you liked it.
Thanks, Craig.
Yeah.
And that's all I got.
Then we waited long. We waited in our waiting pants. The captain's long. The captain doesn't stand a chance. The captain says...
Okay, so just some of the logistical questions. I live in an apartment. I have a very small house, no garage, or, you know, there's a lot of, I can't. I don't know where I'm going with this.
I am building a case to convince myself and my girlfriend to let me get started in this.
Okay.
Well,
Zach, why don't you ask the question then?
How do I get started? I don't have a huge apartment. I'm not like a great cook, and I'm not super great with science. And I don't know what I'm doing. Help me. What's my first step?
You go see Kelly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. You find a group of people that can help you answer that question.
Yes, good,
really.
Cool.
You know,
maybe in a studio.
Yeah.
Or
yeah. A very closed. We can't go anywhere.
Yeah.
Well, I've seen a system on many levels, and I probably need to just throw this to Kelly, but I've seen systems that are like 18 by 34 that are electric that you could probably actually do in your kitchen. They're all-inclusive. All three steps are in the same.
What fun is that, Desiree?
I know. Yeah. No, but I'm saying if you're in a little apartment and you can't have, you know, gas burning open flame, burners, I think there's something for everybody, so don't let that deter you.
I think it's good to start maybe on a even like a 1 gallon scale, right? I know it's not, if you're not using it as your beer consumption beer, but to learn the process.
Yeah,
because obviously you're making like a six pack or whatever in the end, it's not really, but and find out if you like it or not.
Yeah.
And then you haven't invested a bunch of money or time and equipment that you find out, I don't like this hobby or I just can't do it or whatever it is.
Back, go big or go home.
Yeah, I mean, I went 5, 10, you know, whatever. But
you have a minimal investment of $100 to make 5 gallons of beer. 5 gallons of beer is a Sparklets water bottle. How much room does that really take up? You can set it on top of your refrigerator. You can set it over in your laundry room. You can set it in your closet. You can set it in the bathroom. Mm-hmm. Room isn't an issue in beginning and intermediate brewing. All you need is a kitchen and a place to put this 5 gallon container. And cost could be as little as $65. We recommend a little more than that, $100, to get involved in the hobby. So I make my first 5 gallon batch of beer. That's the standard in home brewing. I got 2 cases of beer. I didn't like it. I'm never going to do it again. I spent $100 on 2 cases of beer, of which $50 is used equipment that usually the homebrew shops will take back or a friend will take it off your hands.
Exactly.
So what have I really spent?
Yeah.
Hour or two in my kitchen, made 2 cases of beer that I drank, and I'm never going to do it again. I'm out $50. Whoop-de-doo.
Right. Yeah, or it could be awesome beer, and now you have two cases of awesome beer that you'd be paying
addicted.
$15 at the store for.
And then you're moving, so you have more space for all the stuff you want.
Yeah. Now you're hooked.
Yeah.
And then it just grows from there. Then you just keep adding on, just like any hobby. You keep getting different equipment, bigger equipment. You go into advanced brewing, all-grain brewing, which would require you to be able to go outside and use a higher heat source than what your kitchen's available to you. But just get started. If you love beer and you think it would be fun, it is a great hobby. Okay. One of the very few hobbies I know that pay you back. My golf game sure as heck doesn't pay me back. Matter of fact, I think I drink more beer than golf when I'm out there. But it's a fun hobby. And you never have to take it to the most advanced level. Keep it fun. And when it not becoming fun and becoming work, go back to when it was fun.
Yeah. I love the camaraderie of brewing. I started out pretty simple. It was me and maybe one other person. And if you've got the garage door open, your neighbors are stopping by. Something's happening. They're either doing something completely illegal or super fun, both maybe, who knows. But anyway, so they stop by no matter what. But next thing you know, you're doing a homebrew day and you've got 8 people. Now you've got a group of friends. Everybody's think tanking like, ooh, what are we going to do next? What are we going to, you know, what's next? What's next in the pipeline? And so I find it very few and far between where there's a solo guy hanging out by himself, depressed, brewing with no friends. I think it just creates a huge community.
You know, if you're super short on space, join a homebrew club and see if you can take home a gallon of wort and then just ferment that in your kitchen. Mm-hmm. And then you really just have a gallon jug that you're having to keep space for. You know, use somebody else's equipment and see if you like it. You know.
Excellent point. Or befriend somebody that's already brewing, go watch them do it, and maybe they can, you just keep it at their house, and then you go over there and bottle. There's a plethora of different ways of getting involved in the hobby.
Yeah, pitch in for the ingredients and, you know, say, hey, if I pitch in half the money, can I get half the beer, and I'll scrub the pots, you know? Not very different from getting into a brewery. Yeah. Hey, can I work for free and can I empty out the mash tun?
Sure.
Yes, you can.
Okay, so that's cool because it feels like this big, huge thing to look at to try to get into. I've had other hobbies that are like technically challenging to get into, or like the community's a lot more, you know, insular and like less friendly to newbies. Mm. And so it's cool to know that it's like that there's a gentle on ramp. You know, at whatever level I can engage with or anyone can engage with to get started on it.
So absolutely.
That's,
that's reassuring.
It's just homebrew, man.
Yeah. It's just beer.
Movies are never frowned upon. We look forward, excited. We got a new beer judge in the mix. We got a new great brewer in the mix. We want to teach him how to make beer. We want them to get started. So you should never think that if you're thinking about getting in the hobby that you're going to be shunned or looked down upon because you're just getting started. I found, as Desiree spoke on, in the community, we all help each other. These breweries help each other when all the time when their shipment didn't come in. Yeah. Can you help me out? Mm-hmm. You know, they got each other's back.
Yeah, and that starts as homebrewers. Mm-hmm. That's where that mentality starts. I think
camaraderie comes from. Is, mm-hmm. like you said, you're hanging out with eight people that you didn't know, you know, a couple months ago. Mm-hmm. Somehow they all just migrated to your place.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They like drinking your beer.
And so, that's when mistakes are made, too.
That's how you hone in your ability to not make those mistakes.
That's right.
Yeah.
How many beers can I drink before I make a mistake?
Yeah.
Can't have your first beer until you're boiling.
That's my
right.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's a good policy.
So, Des, I got a question for you.
Vice President.
So you're the vice president of the Rockwall Home Brewers Club.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think I haven't been a home brewer for, you know, for a minute. I haven't been involved in home brewing for a while since we've been, you know, since we opened the brewery, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Have there been, you know, when I was at the North Texas Homebrewers Association, it was a boys club.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of older gentlemen, you know, retirees, nothing better to do than, you know, sit around a turkey fryer in their garage. do you, as a club leader, do you see a younger generation getting into it? Do you see more women getting involved in homebrewing? What's your take on that?
I do. And I think that is our responsibility as leaders in the industry is to be open and willing to coach.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of women do want to brew, but they feel this kind of weight upon them. Well, this was my husband's hobby, or this was, you know, a friend of mine's hobby, and I want to do it, but I'm a little bit insecure about that. And mm-hmm. so we need more girls out there who will show these other girls who are really interested but are afraid to speak up that, hey, I mean, we're doing a lot of cooking in the kitchen
right.
anyways, and so we may be a little bit better than y'all. Just letting you know. We've got that's a little okay. bit of experience, but...
Yeah.
Women were the original brewers.
Yeah, it's true.
And they actually do make great brewers, and we see a lot more women coming into the hobby
mm-hmm.
as they realize that it's not just a man's thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they do make better brewers because mm-hmm. they pay more attention mm-hmm. most of the time.
And bringing your children with you to brew days, you know, if they're old enough to kind of get what's going on and seeing that it really is just like a big cooking class.
Yeah.
You know, they can't partake of the beer, but hey, you know, on the side, we're going to do a root beer this day.
Sure.
Something that you can be a part of. And, you know, and so I think those are coachable moments as parenting in general.
Mm-hmm.
But also, these are our future brewers. These are maybe our future brewery owners. And so I'd find that it is growing. It is moving in that direction where there's a lot more diversity. But I think that's our role as leaders in the industry, to bring on new people, bring a neighbor, bring a nephew or a niece with you and say, hey, you know, it's 4 hours, you know, on a Saturday or whatever. Bring them to a homebrew meeting so they can kind of see what's going on in our world, so to speak.
Yeah, I think that's great. You know, the more the merrier.
Yeah.
More the merrier. And the more diverse our homebrewers are and our beer drinkers are, the more interesting things that
mm-hmm.
we're all going to come up with as a community and push beer forward and push the envelope, as we always do, but keep pushing the envelope mm-hmm. of what craft beer is.
And you never know. You get those real novice people who come and say, well, why don't you just do this? And, you know, and we're so proud of ourselves. It's like, well, because that's how you always do it. Well, then, you know, why don't you just put vanilla in there? Well, because you wouldn't do that to, you know, an IPA. You don't put vanilla in there. It's just not traditional. Well, then you kind of step back and you're like,
right.
wait a minute, this 10-year-old kid just gave me a cool idea. Why didn't I think of that? You know, like, now Johnny's like, you know, coming up with cool stuff for you. But
right.
you never know what's going to come out of the woodwork when you do those things. So
yeah, just be open and try new things.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah. And like you said, you're on a small enough scale. If it doesn't work, you can drink it if you want, as maybe punishment to yourself if you don't like it. Or
sure.
I always just am the fan of just either turning it into something else or just getting rid of it and moving on.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Sure. I said too much space taken up already.
All right. So question for Kelly. How do I get started in homebrewing? You know, are there stores? Are there online resources? What books do I need to go to? What groups? We've talked about a lot of that, but just give us the rundown.
Yes, 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 and yes.
Okay, good.
All right, good.
Thanks.
All right.
Glad to hear it.
Most people are visual. I really encourage people, and we touched on this a little bit, to actually go into a shop where there is somebody there that you can talk to. Now, I'm not saying do a little education before you go in there. Maybe watch a YouTube video. Maybe there's some online books like Palmer's How to Brew book. I think there's a free online version from John Palmer.
Okay.
You can read that. Don't get into the intermediate and advanced section. Just focus on the intro section and how to get started. Come up with your questions, and then maybe watch a YouTube or two. See the equipment. But now go to your local homebrew shop and be able to touch what a racking cane is. What is an airlock? What do they mean by sparge? It's just terminology that you have to learn. And go through the basic procedures. We walk you all the way from the beginning to the end, show you what each piece of equipment is used for. And then when you walk out the door, all you have to do is focus on the cleaning and the sanitizing and the preparation of the ingredients. Mm-hmm. You feel very comfortable when you leave. There is a whole bunch of homebrewing clubs, as we've spoken of, North Texas Homebrewers and Rockwall Homebrewers and Dallas Homebrew Collective, the Red River Homebrewers, the Knights of the Brown Bottle over in Arlington. There's a couple clubs over in Fort Worth. I think McKinney's starting one. I think Denton is starting one. There's always a local homebrew club. Go. They have brew days mm-hmm. where you can go and learn and watch before you want to get started. Mm-hmm. And you make the best friends you ever had and have the best beer you ever had. Mm-hmm. Those are all great ways to get involved. But eventually you're going to have to walk into a shop or order online after you see how it's done and get the equipment. Like I said, it's a minimal investment, $50 to $100. And if you don't like it, you're out very little.
Right. Mm-hmm. If you can follow a recipe, you can brew beer.
If you can make a can of soup, Campbell's chicken yeah. soup for the first time, because this is what we teach people. Hey, you've never cleaned, you've never sanitized, you've never racked, you've never boiled, you've never cooled. You haven't done any of the basic procedures. Why am I going to tell you how to mash at 150, recirculate, sparge, right. collect, boil? So let's learn the basic procedures, mm-hmm. and after you do it once or twice, now I'm ready to go on and go and prepare and learn how to use the
right.
the ingredients.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd say just to point, the local homebrew store is really important, and we are in an area that we're lucky to have a couple available.
Yeah.
I mean, when I started, I really had one, and then, you know, Fort Worth might have had one, but it was obviously way too far of a drive. But like I said, you can go in and talk to somebody that's there every day and talks to every person that comes in there. You know, you can order online, sometimes save money, not, but you don't want to lose that access to that resource.
Yeah.
You forgot a yeast pitch, well, you can go get one. You know, yep. you don't have to ruin your brew day, that sort
Hell,
of thing.
Hell, when we first started out, we'd forget to order something. We'd be like, does Homebrew Headquarters have any?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What time do they open?
Yeah. What time do they open?
Yeah.
Do you have 10,000 pounds of Pilsner?
No. But we've come out. We might have been short of a bag of chocolate malt or something, and
sure.
been like, hey, Kelly, can you help us out? So,
yeah, just
it's been great.
That's part of the community, and you were my customers before you became professionals, and anything to help y'all, be more than happy to help.
Thanks for fighting that good fight.
Keep it up.
Beer.
Kelly, seriously, I do appreciate it. You have been a mentor and a teacher to a lot of people in the beer brewing industry now. We never forget our first teacher, so thank you.
Well, bring me an apple.
There you go. I'll bring you an apple.
I'll bring him a beer.
Yeah. There you go.
And you always do.
Awesome.
So are you saying a cider?
yeah, we could do a cider.
That might work.
All right, guys, we'll be right back with the Homebrew Homies.
Hey, everybody, this is Zach. I just wanted to drop in and give a couple of thanks this episode. First, as always, thank you to you for listening. If you want to help us out, spread the word a little bit. Sharing is caring, after all. You can find us on iTunes or the Google Play Store if you search for Taproom Talks. And you can find us at bit.ly/Taproom Talks for all of your secret work day in browser listening needs. I also want to give a big thanks for this month's theme song. It is MASH by That One Guy. You can find him at that1guy.bandcamp.com, or you could see him live here at our 5th annual Let's Get Weird Halloween party. That One Guy with War Party and Data Howler here Saturday, October 29th from 4 to 9 p.m. Guys, we've got a crazy beer list. We got acrobatic sideshow. We got costume contest. There's a crazy beer list. We got food trucks. We got games. We're going to take a trip down the VHS vortex. Weird creepy videos. We got a weird beer list. Did I mention the beer list, everybody? Sour Project 2, The Witch is Back. Get yourself some Demogorgon, Juice Jenner, Lakewood Fest beer. Guys, I've had some of these. I'm so excited, guys. You do not understand. So get out here and see us. It's going to be awesome.
Listener mail.
No, no, sorry. You can't sing it this time.
Damn it.
I sounded pretty good.
Okay, no. Actually, Craig is not on the mic. He's a listener. He's listening right now.
Oh, he is listening.
So, listener mail.
Oh.
Hey.
Listener mail. Listener mail. Nice. It is time
Maybe
for listener mail.
Right. Okay. I'll cut that. Okay. Craig, you want to ask him?
Craig has a question. We have an in-studio question.
Yes, I have an in-studio question. What is the absolute worst, most vile beer recipe you have ever made?
And I'll start with that.
Yeah, and why did it not deter you?
I decided that I was going to make a basil IPA, which I had done a pairing and with some Italian food, and it was stunning. It was so amazing to have this IPA on my palate and eat just a little bit of a fresh basil afterwards, and I was stoked. Mm-hmm. Went home, did that, didn't sanitize my leaves, and got a... So I was super pumped for this beer. The aroma was pretty good, but yeah, that didn't work out so well. So make sure all your ingredients are sanitary.
I had a... I was still in the kitchen, and I wanted to make a raspberry wheat. And I got frozen raspberries, and I just threw them in. Sure, why not, right? Well, mm-hmm. That didn't turn out well. I had a big moldy mess of raspberries floating on top of the beer, and that didn't taste very good.
Just let it go long.
I did taste it, though.
Well,
I did taste it. Mm-hmm. You got
to
taste it.
It's your punishment, yeah.
What went wrong?
Your penance.
Yeah. It tastes awful.
Mine was, I think they still do it, but I don't know. There's a challenge in kind of Fort Worth called the Iron Mash, where they would...
Yeah, over at Raw.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. I think that year it was cranberries and like serrano peppers. So we made this cranberry serrano wheat ale.
Mm-hmm.
It was disgusting. It was way too hot. And it's funny enough, that keg sat in my garage for about 6 years. I just never dumped it. You know, it was in the two dump section.
Right.
Took it to the brewery one day and was dumping them, cleaning them. I was like, well, I still have to taste it.
Right.
Regardless of how it's
6 years later.
It luckily wasn't infected. Probably all the serranos completely in the middle of that. But it was
everything.
Still hot. It was no good. So finally got dumped.
There you go.
Oh, same thing with me. There's been quite a few different beers that I made that I had to choke down or cut it with another beer just to get through it. You know, the worst ones are the ones that you just give up on. You know you're not going to drink it, and you know no one else is going to drink it. And it's all due to infection. And again, as a home brewer, cleaning and sanitizing is the key. You can make 100 other mistakes and still have good drinkable beer. But if you don't clean and sanitize, that wild yeast or bacteria really can produce some funky flavors.
Yeah. It's going to ruin your day.
Yep.
All right. Thanks, Craig.
You're welcome.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much for joining us today. It's been a lot of fun talking about home brewing with the homebrew homies here.
Yeah.
And thank you so much for coming in again, Kelly from Kelly Harris from Homebrew Headquarters, and thank you, Damon Lewis, the head brewer of Cedar Creek Brewing in
7 points.
7 points. 7 points, just south of Dallas.
Yeah,
right?
About an hour southeast. Yeah.
Okay. And you guys have got tap room hours.
Tap rooms Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So.
Awesome. Kelly, when's the homebrew store open?
7 days a week for your brewing pleasure. Monday through Friday, 10 to 6, 10 to 7 on Thursdays, and 1 to 5 on Sundays.
Excellent. And thank you so much for Desiree as well, Vice President of Rockwall Homebrewers Club, and also Lakewood Brewing Company, salesperson extraordinaire.
Yay.
Tell us, tell our listeners how they can get involved in the Rockwall Homebrew Club.
You can go, we're on Facebook at Rockwall Homebrewers Association. And you can also look us up online, rockwallhomebrewers.com.
Okay. Or you can sign up at Homebrew Headquarters.
You can.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody. I think that wraps it up for today.
I think so.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thanks again, everybody, for listening to this episode of Taproom Talks. If you like us, please tell a friend. You can find us at bit.ly/taproomtalks, or you can search for us on iTunes or Google Play under Taproom Talks. You can also find us on the interwebs at lakewoodbrewing.com, Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Lakewood Brewing. See you next time.
We'll be there.
Mash, mash, mixing the fixtures that they're fixing, and the elixir.